it's amazing how much we're now in this movement that people are starting to realize that mental illness touches us all, every single one, one way or another, we're touched by mental illness. There should be absolutely no stigma or shame. And we're rising up, we're tackling it on collectively as a society, and I'm absolutely convinced, like we've seen changes in our society over the last few years in other areas, we've got a long way to go, but working together is going to make a difference. And I'm so proud and privileged to be able to work with organizations like Peace Gloves, all of you, the Broadway Quartet, aka the Peace Glove Quartet, amazing. So, you know, why are we here today? Because to basically recognize that we've got a challenge in front of us, and yet we can do something about it. Why is there so much stigma and shame? And in my opinion, you know, some people will say this is naive optimism. I think there's some bad people out there. Some people are just crazy, but there's nothing to do about that. But most people, it's really about, they don't know. There's ignorance, there's lack of awareness. And when there's things that you don't understand as being mysterious, you kind of, I don't want to know about it, you know, that's just them, this is me, etc. And I think we can collectively help open people's eyes, educate them. These are just things that affect all of us. There's nothing to be scared of, there's nothing to sort of stigmatize people for, etc. And I think as we do that, we will see people join us and recognize that this is something that touches us all. So, as you heard from Matt, I've been privileged to be in this space, and I really came in this space because during medical school, I unfortunately saw firsthand, you know, how much people suffer when they have these conditions, when you have bad depression, when you have bipolar disorder, when you have post-traumatic stress disorder, when you have schizophrenia, when you have someone who's suicidal. See how much pain and suffering and anguish it causes, not only for the person who's affected, but their whole surrounding, their family, their loved ones, their society. And so I think that, you know, if I can help do something there, you know, what could be more rewarding than that? And then, unfortunately, I also recognize, you know, there's almost a double whammy. It's the conditions themselves, which unfortunately affect so many of us. You've probably read the statistics, one in four of us at some time will be touched by one of these illnesses. And then on top of that, you have stigma and shame that, you know, compounds things that should be unacceptable. And what's really horrible about stigma and shame is that sometimes it even prevents people from getting the treatment they deserve. And that's unacceptable. That's why, you know, we got into this. I trained in psychiatry, and I trained in molecular and cellular biology to try and understand, okay, what could be going on in these illnesses, and what can we do about it? I was privileged to be at the National Institutes of Health for 15 years. I was the director of the Moon and Anxiety Disorder Program, and then about 10 years ago, I joined J&J to see if we could both get to come up with new treatments, but then work collectively as a society to reduce stigma. You know, as I mentioned, ignorance, lack of awareness is one of those things, so let me take just a few minutes to tell you, you know, what do we think we know about the brain? So, some people have said that the brain is the most complex thing in the galaxy, not in our body, but in the galaxy. And so it's not surprising that there's a hell of a lot of joke. You know, we've got billions of these nerve cells that talk to each other and make sense of all this information, our thinking, our emotions, our memory, our ability to experience pleasure, our ability to experience joy, sadness, all that somehow comes about from these millions of connections. It's not surprising that it's a mysterious thing that people haven't quite understood, and so people say, I don't know what's going on there. One of the other things, again, you heard from some of the other people prior to me, these illnesses, when people are suffering from one of these conditions, it's not like a broken leg, or even something like diabetes or something. You just kind of get it, or you see that you've got a cast in leg. This is a little bit more hidden. And so you've got this tendency to just sort of, you know, think, well, you know, what could it really be? And you get this platitude as well, if you exercise more, or you just, you know, meditate more, you do this, and all those things are good, of course they're good. But that doesn't really get to, you know, the fact that these are people who are suffering. So we need to really help people understand that. We've got a long way to go in terms of our understanding of the brain and the mind, tall you are, your skin color, whether you might be at risk for diabetes, whether you might be at risk for depression, hypertension, etc. The genes, most of these genes, are not deterministic. And what that means is that they put you at a little bit of risk. So all of us carry some of the genes. Some of these genes might look for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, depression, etc. But then genes and environment interact. And this is true of all illnesses. If you have hypertension, the environment, stress, etc. will make your blood pressure worse. It will make your heart worse, sorry. It will make your anatomy worse. So that's not unusual, but what we're learning about is how the genes and environment interact. So you may well know that unfortunately in our society, often many people have had childhood abuse, sexual abuse, physical abuse, etc. And that unfortunately sometimes sets people on a trajectory to develop later. How does that happen? How does something that happened here in childhood, 20 years later, put you at risk? And we've learned that it's something called epigenetics. So we all are born with these genes, but the genes get turned on or off depending on the environment. And one example is exercise. If you work out, you turn on certain genes in your muscles that might allow you to run farther, lift more weights, etc. The same thing happens with our environment. When you have bad things that happen in your environment, it turns these genes on. That can then put you at risk. But as I said, these things are not necessarily deterministic. They're probabilistic, and the good news is that you can do something about it. So the right treatment, the treatment doesn't just mean medication. Treatment means medication, treatment means resilience, as you heard from Sandy Taylor. Treatment means psychotherapy, art, communicating, all those things. We can actually kind of undo some of the effects. So that's one of those. One of the big things we've learned about is this area we call synaptic plasticity. And what the hell does synaptic plasticity mean? There are many definitions, but one good way I like to communicate it is that all of you here, you're going to remember, we were at this Peace Club event. We heard from the Broadway Quartet, we heard from Matt, we heard from Jeff, Sandy, etc. You may not remember every detail, but you're going to remember it. It's because our brains are what's called plastic. Things are actually changing as we speak. Make this information relatively pertinent. And now one of the reasons we're excited about that is recently we've capitalized on that to try and come up with treatments for depression that can treat severe suicidal depression in hours rather than weeks. And we think we've done that. So, it used to be that you had to think, okay, you take this antidepressant, you wait 4 to 8 weeks, and it doesn't work, and you try the next one, and now, why should that be? So we think by getting these plasticity tests, you can do that. So there's a lot of these advances that are taking place, and I'm absolutely convinced that the more we can, make these advances, we will educate society, and we'll start to do something about the stigma. But we can't wait. We've got to do something here and now. So we've got to get people to understand. And as you heard from Jeff and Matt, in Davos, at the World Economic Forum, why does the World Economic Forum care about these illnesses? They care about the environment. I've been rambling longer than I thought. I got the premium. The World Economic Forum cares about this because these things touch every facet of our lives. It affects our relationships, our ability to go to school, our ability to work and be productive, etc. So people are coming together, and as I said, I think we're in the middle of a movement. Now, why art? Art is very special. So art is something that what makes us human, our ability to express ourselves through these creative processes. You go through the books of history, and you can see so many artists, writers, poets, musicians. So that's what we're talking about mental illness. There's a special link between creativity and mental illness. And many people have found that the art is a way to actually express yourself and communicate. And there may be something especially about language and expressing yourself in stories, either verbally or written, that is so powerful. You heard from Matt, you heard from the video you saw about the prison system, etc. There's something that not only helps you to be able to express what you're going through, what they're lacking, or they might be, etc. But it lets other people know, you're not alone. You know, I'm like you. We've all been there. You know, the last song, or one of the songs you heard from Sandy and Taylor, well, in terms of, you know, the hope and future, we can collectively still have hope in each other, etc. And then the other thing about expressing ourselves and expressing yourself the way you do, you also really structured in a way of stigma. Because unfortunately, our society would have a tendency to compartmentalize and say, that is a bipolar person. No. They're an individual who has a million characteristics. They also happen to have bipolar illness, just like many of us have hypertension, diabetes, etc. They're not a bipolar person. And by expressing yourself as the whole caring, knowledgeable person you are, you can really communicate this and galvanize the movement. So we could not be prouder than to work with Geek Club and all of you. And I really feel confident that coming together